This weekend starts right after this.
Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This weekend with your host, Gordon Deal.
The new norm in Seattle. I'm Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. Here's what's coming up this hour.
America's first coronavirus hotspot looks and feels drastically different from just a few weeks ago. We'll visit King County, Washington.
Just because we don't have a handle on the coronavirus doesn't mean we should do nothing financially. We'll have steps to bolster your budget.
The New York City couple who tied the knot while racing against coronavirus restrictions.
And how do our mail carriers manage in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak?
Own hygiene, make sure that he is not just staying, you know, keeping his hands clean and washing up all the time and using the sanitizer, but also showing the people that you're delivering mail to, people who are still doing business in Duluth, Minnesota, showing them that, hey, you know, can I use your bathroom to clean my quite often.
John Stoll at the Wall Street Journal profiles a mailman in Duluth, Minnesota. Well, before public officials across the country began closing bars, restaurants, and other businesses, Seattle had already begun to shut down. You'll recall it was the first major city hit by an outbreak of the new coronavirus. Aaron Granillo, reporter for Cairo Radio, one of our affiliates, joins us now from Seattle for what might be a preview of what the rest of the country could be in for. Aaron, what's it like in the city?
You know, it's not quite a ghost town like you've seen in a lot of national media reports, but it is. There's a sense of, it's eerie, you know? I mean, you go to downtown now. I've been covering a lot of stories about businesses that are struggling in lieu of the governor's orders now to essentially shut down bars and restaurants. And there aren't people on the streets. I went there at the lunch rush just a couple of days ago, and I was profiling a food truck right next door to Amazon's headquarters in downtown Seattle. This is a business that relies exclusively on foot traffic, and they're seeing 10 customers during the entire lunch rush. And this is a business, mind you, that pulled in maybe $70,000 last month. They're projecting $10,000 this month, and that was before the governor's orders to shut down restaurants. So there's a real sense of, I mean, fear amongst a lot of working class people. I have friends who work in restaurants and bars, and thankfully, a lot of the businesses out here, they do have contingency funds, and they are able to pay their employees at least paid and sick leave for, you know, upwards of a month, maybe 2 months if they're lucky. But if this thing stretches beyond that, I mean, there are people who are seriously wondering for the first times in their lives how they're going to afford to keep the lights on and feed themselves, quite literally.
Boy, numbers may not be totally up to date and accurate as of this conversation, but there were more than 900 cases, I guess. 40 plus people had died. And you referenced some people being scared. Like, it must be the only topic of conversation.
We have been talking about this for well over a month, to be perfectly honest with you, because we had that first case back in January.
Yeah.
January 20th was the first reported case in the United States. And we thought things were under wraps. For 6 weeks there, things were calm. And then you heard about the outbreak at the nursing facility. And I came in on a Saturday to do a special report. And we heard about one death. And then we heard there are upwards of 50 to 100 people at this nursing facility who might have been exposed. And because we've been covering it pretty closely, we said, this could be a really big problem because we know well that this virus tends to kill people who are older and have underlying conditions. And that's exactly what happened. I mean, it spiraled out of control in a matter of days. The numbers exploded. Last week, we were talking about 100 cases. And now you mentioned 900. We're over 1,000 now, and more than 50 deaths. And look, we're not out of it yet. the modeling shows that this virus, the number of cases, doubles and then exponentially increases. So if we have 1,000 cases today, in a couple of days, that might be 2,000. In a few days from there, that might be 4,000. And you do the math from there.
Yeah.
But the good news is we did take these really drastic measures in the last several days now. And we don't think the curve is going to slow, at least for the next couple of weeks. But the goal here is to, and as you're well aware, is to prevent what happened in places like Italy, in places like China, where you can flatten the curve and hopefully that flattens in a couple of weeks and we start to see the numbers level out. We'll have to see if that happens, though, based on all these very strict restrictions, school closures, restaurant closures. I mean, you cannot have gatherings of more than 50 people. That is an order from our governor here.
Yeah. We're speaking with Aaron Granillo. He's a reporter at Cairo Radio in Seattle, one of our affiliates, talking about how the coronavirus has affected that city and the larger region. So these measures, are people largely abiding by them? I think I saw something saying at a park there was a soccer practice going on or some joggers.
There are some parks that are now closed, I can tell you that. And the governor has been asked, how are you going to enforce these measures? And he expects people to self-police themselves. From what I gather, I think people are finally starting to take it seriously. That's just my general sense. The governor has not been parsing words here. He's telling people, if you have gatherings of more than 10 people, you are at risk, and I quote here, you will kill your grandfather. These are the words that he has been using for some time now.
That is a powerful phrase. Aaron Granillo, reporter for Cairo Radio in Seattle. 13 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. It's time for you to upgrade to new, modern devices with Windows 10. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
Thanks for spending time with us. First weekend of spring. So that's some good news, right? Well, the U.S. Postal Service has issued gloves, masks, and hand sanitizer to carriers as they prepare to venture out in the midst of the coronavirus outbreak. How are they managing? Here's This Weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
As the coronavirus forces big changes in the way we work, the Wall Street Journal has been looking at how different people are coping with the stresses and risks. Here now is John Stoll, who has profiled one postal worker in Duluth, Minnesota. John, who did you talk to?
I talked to a 21-year veteran of the Duluth post office, and he's been carrying mail there on different routes. His name is Dick Lapine, and he is one of those guys that just prides himself on never missing a day. He's banked, you know, a lot of sick days that the post office actually allows you to cash in at retirement. So he's 62 years old. So this has kind of been his MO, like, I just don't work this work. So I went and talked to him.
So what was his routine like before, and what changes is he making?
Yeah, I think his routine, he took it for granted. I mean, there were a couple disruptions over, you know, H1N1 and the anthrax scare when he first started in the early 2000s, you know, they definitely had to be on the high alert then. But for the last several years, it's been business as usual. He is heavily assigned to business routes, so shopping malls and nail salons and restaurants and apartment buildings and toy stores. And he's a very jocular, kind of casual guy, talked about always stopping in and spending time. And so, you know, the 6-hour route probably didn't need to be 6 hours long, but the type of guy that kind of stretched that out over the course of a day. I think for sure this has changed a lot of things. Number one is his own hygiene, making sure that he is not just staying, you know, keeping his hands clean and washing up all the time and using the sanitizer. They've issued gloves. He doesn't feel like that's the right move because they get so dirty. They're hard to keep clean. So he just washes his hands all the time. But also showing the people that you're delivering mail to, people who are still doing business in Duluth, Minnesota, showing them that, hey, you know, can I use your bathroom to clean my hands? Quite often, I think he's washing his hands as much as he's delivering mail. And then finally, I just think there's been a different posture among many of the companies that he's businesses that he is visiting, a little bit more of an alarm. Let's keep our distance. Don't use our bathroom sort of stuff. So definitely it's changed the kind of the intimate personal nature that some mail carriers do have with the people on their route.
We're speaking with John Stoll of the Wall Street Journal. John, does the post office have any unusual rules for their workers and mail carriers now to follow?
I don't think anything unusual. I think everything was pretty well expected. I did hear from other carriers once I published the story saying there is some concern that there's a lot of unknown, and I think the post office is afraid, not to speak on their behalf, but I think basically there's a fear of over communicating in areas where there's just not enough science. So for instance, you know, I got an email from one a legitimate email from one carrier who asked if I thought that a hairdryer, heating a package with a hairdryer, might kill the virus, and obviously I don't know, and I asked if they had talked to the Postal Service about this, and they said that, you know, it's really a sort of situation where the post office is going to give out information that they know to be factual, to not try to propagate myths or wives' tales about what could or could not kill the virus. I mean, you know, look, they're going into their typical routines. They're understaffed, so there's a lot more overtime, and they're actually working a lot harder than typical, given how much overtime they have to clock, that is the carriers, and the folks in processing and just running the daily operation. So there is a lot of protocol to make sure people check their health every day, and if they at all feel like they shouldn't be going into work, they have every right to call in and try to either pull forward sick days or use sick days that they already have. But, you know, the typical government-issued hand sanitizer, gloves, face mask and stuff, so I'm told are available pretty readily. Sometimes they run out, but they're able to get it relatively fast.
Wall Street Journal business columnist John Stoll with this weekend's Jennifer Koshenka.
I've got that electricity charge inside, energy like the lightning strike. Take one spark and I will ignite, never stopping, I won't stand by.
Now that Human Resources Director Ryan Lee has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's really on top of his game. He even has his own hype song.
I'm the best beyond belief. I got strength and got the speed. I've got that
entire workforce, complete with different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
No, nobody catching up. They're not fast or strong enough. I've got that electricity charging sense. Take one spark in.
I'm attracting and engaging the best people every step of the way.
Never stopping, I won't stand by.
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
Never stopping, I won't stand by.
Thanks for joining us. The coronavirus is already changing how and where people work, and 5G will add to the options we have for telecommuting. Both will force companies to rethink how aggressively to promote telecommuting and how we provision remote workers to slow the advance of pandemic threats. It's an opinion piece by Rob Enderle in computerworld.com. He's the founder of the Enderle Group. Rob, how do you see this?
People are still need to engage, but they just can't engage in person, and companies are shutting down, telling their employees to go home and work from home if they can. And and certainly we've seen a rather dramatic impact on things like food services near some of these companies because the employees aren't there to actually go and have lunch. And even if their employees are there, they're afraid to go to have lunch because they're afraid of picking up the virus at the restaurant. So it's a major change in behavior. And for years, we've been trying to push forward the idea of telecommuting, of video conferencing, of using technology instead of getting in your car and driving to work or flying to an event or whatever. And pretty much all the attempts to make this the policy, the rule rather than the exception, have failed. But now, if we go through this coronavirus, this COVID-19 pandemic, as we go through this, we're going to have at least about 18 months of this kind of an experience. The studies have indicated, the AIs have indicated now that COVID-19 won't mitigate during the summer. So this means we're going to have a straight, until we have an antivirus, which is 12 to 18 months out, we're going to have to continue doing what we're doing. And that's going to force us to change behavior and lock in that behavior. Because if you can go for a year doing something, now you've got a habit. And with that habit, perhaps we'll stay out of cars. At least more of us will stay out of cars and stay out of airplanes.
Are we in a better position technologically than ever to do it?
Yeah, we are. We've got video. Well, I should say yes and no. So yes, in terms of we've got virtual reality headsets. We've got new tech coming that allow us to conference in virtual rooms with the headsets. We've had holoportation, which is the Microsoft technology using the HoloLens. We've got a lot of stuff out there to use, but the difficulty is, and what I say the no part is, we haven't been really great on standards, and so a lot of this stuff doesn't interoperate. So if you've got a VR solution from one vendor, it may not work with another vendor's kit. And so the end result is the interoperability part, the thing that we actually got right with telephones and things like Wi-Fi. We still haven't made the big step to get that done with video conferencing. Clearly, phones work with each other, but the video conferencing stuff is not ubiquitous. You can't take a FaceTime client, for instance, and log into a WebEx conference. It won't work.
We're speaking with Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. He's written a piece on computerworld.com entitled Coronavirus and 5G Will Boost Telecommuting and Change Our Tech Future. Revisit what you mentioned before, that holoportation from Microsoft. How does that work? It sounds fascinating.
It is. It's pretty cool. You put up put their VR headset, well, actually their AR headset, on your head, and it actually puts you in the space with whoever else is remotely using that HoloLens. And so the experience is very much like you're in the room together. Now, if you're both wearing the HoloLens, you're going to see each other with the HoloLens on your head. If one of you is wearing the HoloLens and the one that's not wearing the HoloLens looks normal, and you look like you've stepped out of a spaceship. So that's one of the things that is actually fixable, because if you looked at things like deepfakes, where they can take a face, somebody else's face, and put it on your body and do it very, very well, you could use that same technology to remove the HoloLens from the individual's head, and now it looks like you're looking at each other. You do need to have a camera on the eyes to get eye expression, but other than that, we do have the technology to make it so you're all wearing the headset, but it looks like you aren't. And the nice thing about going in this particular route is you can do other things, like you can change your wardrobe digitally. When you go around all day at your house in a bathrobe, but it looks like you're wearing a three-piece suit every time you drop into a meeting. So little things like that could be important, or for areas that have different clothing requirements. I mean, you could drop into a religious meeting and suddenly you're dressed like a father or a nun. So though probably wouldn't be wise if you were dropping into a Jewish synagogue meeting. But anyway, so you do have to be selective. But it does give you a lot of flexibility in terms of how you appear. And a lot of folks, you know, wear makeup. You wouldn't need to do makeup. You could apply the makeup digitally.
How about that? Rob Enderle, principal and founder of the Enderle Group. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Weekend. Let me tell you about my new favorite way to pass the time while commuting. It's the app called Blinkist. Blinkist works on your phone, your tablet, or your web browser. Blinkist takes the need-to-know information from thousands of nonfiction books and whittles it down to just 15 minutes. Successful people like business leaders are well known for reading self-improvement books. I just finished listening to Snowball, a Warren Buffett biography. Listen to Blinkist while commuting or maybe exercising, even while you're waiting for your kids to finish practice. Blinkist has the latest titles from bestseller lists as well as the classic nonfiction titles you always meant to read. I also like listening to some of the history titles since I never had much good history in school. Right now, for a limited time, Blinkist has a special offer just for our audience. Go to Blinkist.com/morning to try it free for 7 days and save 25% off your new subscription. That's Blinkist, spelled B-L-I-N-K-I-S-T, Blinkist.com/morning to start your free 7-day trial. You'll also save 25%, but only when you sign up at Blinkist.com/morning. Thanks for spending part of your weekend with us. First full weekend in spring. Coming up this half hour, how to manage OCD and anxiety amid the coronavirus. Also, steps you could be taking now to bolster your finance in the midst of COVID-19. Also, the latest spot for coronavirus hoarders. And the New York City couple determined to get married amid some of these pandemic closings. We'll have that story in about 20 minutes. Well, COVID-19, this new form of coronavirus, is dominating the news, of course. It can be a worrying time, but for those who suffer from anxiety and or a form of obsessive-compulsive disorder, it may feel especially challenging. How to manage these disorders in the midst of coronavirus with Dr. Robert Melillo, chiropractic neurologist, also author of a new book called Einstein's Desk. Doctor, what should we know?
Well, there's a couple things. One is I always start with, what is OCD? What is it neurologically? And what we know is that it's basically an overactivity of networks on the left side of the brain that are related to ADHD, related to tics, and that it's an underdevelopment of the right side of the brain. So there's a couple things. One is managing it means stimulating the right side of the brain, which is doing things like going for a run, exercising, meditating, deep breathing, singing, humming, different things that will activate the right side of the brain, getting in touch with nature, going out and really interacting with other people, being social. What you don't want to do is you don't want to stay home. You don't want to isolate yourself too much. You don't want to stay on the internet or computers. You don't want to play a lot of video games. You don't want to go on social media a lot because that stimulates the left brain networks that are related to addictive, obsessive, compulsive behavior, anger, and fear. And so I think, just understanding neurologically, doing things that are going to help manage it by actually lowering what it is, by activating the right side of the brain, doing more creative things, painting, writing a song, writing a rap song, things like that will help stimulate the right side of the brain.
So does the right side brain stimulation apply as well for anxiety, or is that just OCD?
No, anxiety is related to that. I mean, most anxiety, if you define it, it's an anticipation of a negative event, right? That is what anxiety is. It's different than depression. Depression is where you're sad. Depression is where you feel like withdrawn and lack of motivation. Anxiety is more almost a form of mania. And again, we see that the left brain, when it's overactive, produces mania. The same networks that produce obsessive, compulsive, hyperactive, and addictive behaviors also produce manic behavior. And OCD is kind of a form of manic behavior. So what we see is that, stimulating the right brain will help reduce that anxiety and that fear, that anticipation of something negative that may come in the future.
I'm speaking with Dr. Robert Melillo. He's a chiropractic neurologist in New York, also author of an upcoming book called Einstein's Desk. And we're talking about how to manage OCD and anxiety in the midst of the coronavirus pandemic. What is an example, I guess, of OCD behavior or anxiety as it pertains to coronavirus? Are we now sort of, giving some folks a license to, hand sanitize every 2 minutes or wash their hands with warm soapy water every 2 minutes?
Yeah, when we look at obsessive compulsive behavior, there are a couple, but primarily four main categories. One category has to do with hygiene, has to do with making sure that we're clean and that we're not going to poison ourselves. The other thing is what we call symmetry and making sure things are symmetric around us. Checking, which means check that we've done things like turning off our lights or washing our hands or doing things like that. And the other is hoarding, right? So those are the main categories. So washing your hands, hygiene, and checking, those are the two that are going to be most affected by coronavirus, because making sure you've checked that things are clean, that you've checked, that you've washed your hands, being obsessed with your hygiene. These are the parts that, these are the networks. There's specific networks in the brain on the left side that activate these things, and there's specific networks in the right side of the brain that literally inhibit this type of behavior. So normally, we turn on this behavior, we say, I have to wash my hands, or maybe this might make me sick. We do that and then it shuts off, right? But in people with OCD, the right side isn't there to shut it off. So they initiate it and it just goes on and on and on and on and on, and they can't stop it. And that's the problem.
Thanks, Robert. Dr. Robert Melillo, chiropractic neurologist. Again, his new book is called Einstein's Desk. It is 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
Michigan is one of the best places in the country to do business. But you don't have to take our word for it. Take Evan Lyles, CEO of Roush Enterprises, instead.
For the people that are involved in product development, there couldn't be more unique and exciting opportunities that are really going to shape the future of the world. It's a really exciting time to be in Michigan.
Big things are happening in business here. Find out why by searching Michigan Pure Opportunity.
Do business more powerfully during Dell's semi-annual sale. Save up to 45% on Dell computers and servers with Intel Core processors. It's time for you to upgrade to new, modern devices with Windows 10. Also, save on electronics and accessories, plus free shipping on everything and special financing with Dell Business Credit. Call 877-BUY-DELL to talk to a Dell Technologies advisor who can help you find just the right tech. That's 877-BUY-DELL or visit dell.com/businessdeals.
Thanks for joining us. The coronavirus may be highly contagious, but so too is fear. But should we be so fearful? This time around, we can be reasonably confident that the economic impact will be temporary. Medical researchers are saying we could have a vaccine by next year, and they may discover that existing drugs currently used for other diseases are effective against the coronavirus. The damage to the economy will not be permanent. What should we do in the meantime? Amid all the uncertainty, here are steps that could bolster your finances from Jonathan Clements, founder of HumbleDollar.com. Jonathan, set this up.
There is so much that we don't know, Gordon. I mean, we don't know when there's going to be a vaccine. We don't know how many people will die. We don't know whether the current containment efforts will stop the spread. We also don't know how much economic damage is going to be done. So the best thing to do is, in many ways, just forget about that stuff. You cannot control it. You know, you're asking questions to which there aren't answers. Instead, you need to think about how you're going to respond to this situation and what it is that is within your control. And one of the first things I think people should realize is that there is an opportunity here. You know, this is one of those great buying opportunities in the stock market. And if you want to take advantage, you're going to have to buy while the headlines are grim. By the time the headlines are better, the great opportunity will be over.
I know the advice generally is to try not to time the market. Is this considering timing the market?
To a degree, we all do become timers at this point, but it may be timing in a less extreme version. I mean, market timing is usually thought of as going to all stocks or all cash.
Okay.
What we're talking here about is, you know, when are you going to rebalance your portfolio? Let's say you aim to have 70% of your money in stocks and 30% of your money in bonds. Thanks to this market decline, you're going to have less in stocks than your target percentage. So at some point, you're going to have to rebalance to get back to that 70% stock. Mm-hmm. There's a degree of market timing in that. I would say go ahead and do it now and be prepared to do it again later. You may also have extra money sitting around that you're prepared to put into the stock market, particularly as we're all now spending less because we're stuck at home.
Yeah.
And we can't go to restaurants, we can't go on vacation. Maybe you want to use that money to overweight stocks and to put even more money into the market at this point.
We're speaking with Jonathan Clements. He's the founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. He's written a piece entitled Fear Not. It's about steps to bolster your finances during this coronavirus outbreak. Point number two you made, play your final card. Explain that one.
So one of the most unpopular financial products out there, and yet one that I am a fan of, is something called an immediate fixed annuity. And with an immediate fixed annuity, all you do is you hand over a chunk of money to an insurance company, and then they send you a check every month for the rest of your life. They're relatively simple products. People don't like it because they hate the idea they're going to buy the annuity and then keel over tomorrow. But the fact is, if you're a retiree and you're looking at what's happening in the bond market and to interest rates and saying, I can't live off 1% yields, buying an immediate fixed annuity could solve your problems, because interest rates are only one component in the pricing of an immediate fixed annuity. The other key component is life expectancy, and life expectancies have not radically changed in the past couple of months. So even as interest rates have been cut in half, life expectancies have pretty much stayed the same. What that means is that if you go out and you buy an immediate fixed annuity, you're probably going to get not much less than you would have 3 months ago.
Thanks, Jonathan. Jonathan Clements, founder and editor of HumbleDollar.com. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Weekend.
best in the game. Ain't nothing to it. World class, I'm a cut above the rest.
Now that Human Resources Director Fernando Pino has Kronos for HR, payroll, talent, and time, he's completely crushing it. He even has his own hype song.
Supporting our entire workforce, everyone has different hours, skill sets, and pay grades.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top, top, I'm gonna rise up.
Motivating and engaging our people every step of the way.
Blast off to the front of the field. This is
Kronos, HR solutions for the modern workforce and the people who support them. Learn more at kronos.com/HR swagger.
I'm on the top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top, top, I'm gonna rise up. I'm on the top.
Hey, glad you could spend part of your weekend with us. It's been less frantic than the scenes at ransacked supermarkets, but there's been a nationwide rush for books, CDs, and DVDs at public libraries that began closing last weekend to deter spreading of the coronavirus. More from James Haggerty, reporter at the Wall Street Journal. James, what did you look at here?
Public libraries started announcing on Friday last week that they were going to close, and I wondered, would that set off the same kind of a rush to the library as we've seen at supermarkets? And the answer was not quite as frantic, but still pretty strong. People were rushing into libraries to check out books, DVDs, whatever they could get their hands on.
And so at first it was, as you point out, librarians promising to keep like digital services open, right? Like the ability to have access to electronic books, things like that, and then that's all changed?
No, libraries will keep their digital services open. That's okay. The good news. So lots of people can check out e-books or tap into research databases. Some libraries are talking about offering a curbside service where you could pick up a book that you ordered. Some have even talked about getting volunteers who might deliver books to your home. But for the most part, libraries are closed in terms of going in there and browsing around.
So there might be somebody, for example, who could drop off some books at the curb for you or put them in lockers. There was one library, I think, talked about lockers.
That's right. One library has lockers, and they're hoping to set them up outside the doors so people could pick up books. They said they would sanitize the books and sanitize the lockers.
How's selection at this point? Or I guess in the final hours before libraries were actually closed, were people snatching all the classics, or was there a particular run on books?
Most of the libraries are closed now across the country. But there was a run on books. I think it was sort of predictable. Most people picked up popular titles and DVDs. But there were also people picking up highbrow books, lots of people picking up children's books.
I'm speaking with James Haggerty, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. He's got a piece entitled Latest Hotspot for Coronavirus Hoarders, the Public Library. These are folks who kind of have moved on, or if they were ever involved with things like hand sanitizer or toilet paper. What about services like Wi-Fi? A lot of folks go in there and need that, obviously, to do work or homework.
Oh, that's right. Lots of people rely on the library for a computer access. That's going to be a problem. Some librarians have pointed out that you might still be able to use the Wi-Fi if you go to the parking lot. So that's some small consolation. But it's going to be a big problem for a lot of people, particularly the homeless.
All right. Thanks, James. James Haggerty, reporter at The Wall Street Journal. 6 minutes now in front of the hour on this weekend. Thanks for spending time with us on this first weekend of spring. The coronavirus outbreak prompted two New York City lovebirds to speed up their plans and officially tie the knot. 26-year-old Danica Goh and 29-year-old Anders Lindstrom got married at the city clerk's office this past week. The New York Daily News says the couple posed for photos on the Manhattan side of the Brooklyn Bridge, a rare scene of jubilation in a city where restaurants are closed and places of worship have stopped providing services in the wake of the pandemic. Last week, the city clerk's office performed slightly more wedding ceremonies than this time last year. Could be a trend. The couple had bought plane tickets for relatives for an April bash, but had called off the plans in light of a state ban on large gatherings. The bigger plan now for the two is to have a church wedding in Sweden later on, perhaps this year or next. The city clerk's office, by the way, in New York, is only letting in 50 people to its main space at a time and limiting attendance at the chapel where wedding ceremonies are performed to just 10 people. That'll do it for this hour. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Weekend. Great news. There's a quick way you could save money. Switch to Geico. Geico could help you get great coverage at a great price, and it only takes 15 minutes to see if you could save 15% or more on car insurance. Go to geico.com today and see how much you could save.